Welcome to the Insider Safe Place for Men podcast show. Because every male survivor deserves hope, healing, support, and a BMW. And here's your male survivor, leadership coach, and hypnotherapist, Thomas Edward. All right, everybody. What's up? What's up? How are you guys doing out there? Hopefully you are surviving and thriving because you are so thrivers. All right. So welcome to another of the podcast, Safe Place for Male Survivors. All right. We're getting that branding in there. Safe Place for Male Survivors.com. All right, peeps. How are you guys doing? Hey, so for this, I'm going to keep it a little bit short because we kind of got a long one. I know I usually keep it to around, you know, the 20, 30 minutes because, you know, neuroscience says that's pretty much how much your brain can take unless it's really engaging, right? Then it can maybe go a little bit longer. But so I had an opportunity over the past week, an organization that they were actually interviewing me. And so the interviewer was Katie Costner. I don't know if you know about Katie Costner, but she was the first woman in history to actually speak out nationally as a victim of rape. And she was on the cover of Time magazine at the age of 18, right, sharing this story. And there was a movie, an HBO movie in Lifetime that was made about her story. And she's just an outspoken activist and entrepreneur. And so she goes around and she speaks and she talks to different people, you know, professional sports teams, academies, universities, filmmakers, all these different type of places. So someone told her about the work that I do working with male survivors. And she's like, oh, it would be great, you know, to have you on my show, podcast show, you know, just so we can get more audience out there and get more help for male survivors. So I was like, great, you know, sign me up and I'll talk like I usually do, just like I do on the podcast show here. So we had an opportunity to do that actually in the past week. And so I just wanted to share that interview with you. And so you just have an opportunity. And once again, you know me, once you start asking me a question, I just start throwing this stuff out there. So she even was saying in the podcast, she was like, okay, she's like, you can rewind, take a breath and rewind if you need to. And you can do that also, because once I get going, especially if I'm talking about the neuroscience stuff, it's just like starts coming out of my head and off I go. That's something I guess I need to work on, maybe slow that down, but it's hard because I get excited when I'm talking about those different type of insights and strategies and, you know, and helping people so they're not in these spaces for long periods of time, right? So helping them to give them the impetus, whatever it needs to move them to whatever the next stage is. And as I always say, I'm just a piece. I'm just one of the stepping stones, right? So people come and they work with me, coach with me, and then it's like, okay, right? Now you get to decide what's the rest of your healing journey is going to look like, if you need to do that. All right, so I'll share that piece of the interview actually with you. So, you know, those of you that are on your treadmills or Craig that's out there walking, hey, you might get some extra time in today in that workout if you're actually, you know, exercising, doing it to the full podcast. All right, so with no further ado, here is the interview from Katie Costner.
Hey, everybody, it's Katie Kessner. Welcome back to the Dear Katie podcast. We are so incredibly honored to have with us a very special guest, T-Bone. You will, I'm sure, find his narrative, his story, his journey, his passions, and all of his interests inspiring and healing. But I always like to start with the important self-care. Obviously, this information, these messages, this story can be hard for all of us to hear if we have been through something ourselves or someone close to us has been through sexual violence of any form. So I encourage all of you to push pause, stop at any time. The recording will be available and just take a moment. Way to start us off.
All right.
All right, Ben, who are you? Where do you come from? And Tell us a little bit about yourself.
So Thomas Edward, and you know, I've been doing this coaching. Oh, as I see, this is 24. So it's been 23 years that I've been doing male survivor coaching. Before that, I came from, well, first the federal post office, and then from there I moved into the corporate world. So in the corporate world, I worked at Microsoft for 15 years. I worked for Amazon, still doing, you know, training, those different type of things. And then I decided in, 2014, a little bird told me that, hey, you know, your department is going to pretty much be ripped. It's not going to exist anymore. I know. And so I said, okay, you know what? I'm just going to step out and do my own thing and just do, you know, leadership training, executive leadership training. I said, but then that'll give me more time to actually start focusing on the safe place for male survivors. Before it was nice, let me put it this way, because, you know, the Microsoft would like pay for the retreats and stuff that I was set up for, right? That was, you know, that was nice. I just cash out some stock and say, hey, don't worry if you can't make it, just come. So that was a nice kind of little perk of Microsoft there. But, you know, when I step back from 2014, it's like, okay, I started to, you know, create more online courses and things for survivors to take. And I just actually started to do more coaching. So, you know, I'm happy. You know, people like, would you go back? You know, what if they offered you, you know, like $200,000? And I'm like, no, been there, done that. And this is what I'm doing now. So, yeah.
Lovely. T-Bone, I think that's helpful for everybody here, like how you choose your path. And especially what you turned down and why.
Yeah.
Because I just want to land on one thing for our listeners. It's sometimes important to say no to things.
Yeah.
Many of us are not good at that. And some of us don't know what to say yes to and what to say no to.
Yes.
And I think this podcast will help us think about that too. But maybe we roll back just for a quick step.
Yeah.
When you thought about coming forward as helpful for male survivors, especially, I want to ask two questions. Yeah. One, what was your personal, like whatever you want to share about your personal story, but then how did you come? Most people say the same thing to me. Like, how can I take myself out of my personal trauma and build it into a way to help others so they can thrive and survive? Because that in and of itself is the, when we take this happened to me, first pronoun,
yeah,
to now, yeah, you, second, like all of us,
yeah,
that's a huge step. So what was the I part, and then how did you get to the you part?
Okay, it's kind of all mixed together. I'll say the answer is it came out of frustration. So now let me share a little bit of my story. So my sexual abuse took place from age pretty much 6 into my teens, 15 and 16. And I have multiple, and I do mean multiple perpetrators, abusers in my story. And so, you know, hopefully, if, like she said, if you get triggered, whatever, you know, step away if you need to. But there were some very, it was difficult because there were like violent pieces of it, but then there were also grooming parts of it, right? And so my sexual abuse, some took place within family, and then some were, you know, like, you know, close friends. Now, the ones, what is interesting, the ones that kind of, I'm going to say, my fragmented memory kind of fragmented out, and I didn't totally forget them, but they weren't there, they were gone, were the ones that were kind of the most violent, the most that were extreme, right? So the rape scenarios, and that was one where, you know, the person, they were raping me, they had my face in a pillow, right, and I couldn't breathe. So just think about what's going on in your brain. You know, you can't breathe, right? So you're trying to get air. And then on the other end, so someone is raping you from behind. And it's like, wow. Now I had my blank head totally blocked that one out. And I think because of the severity of the trauma. Yet some of the other ones, so there was some grooming that took place by a family member. And so with that one, it was kind of more of a gradual. And here's the thing I could never figure out, and it still even bugs me till today, Katie. And it's like, why didn't I get the memo? how did everyone, you know what I mean? It's like, yeah, how did everyone know that I was the one to whatever, to pick on or to sexually abuse? And I don't think anyone, you know, had conversations with each other. I don't know, but, you know, and that's one of the things, even as survivors, we always trying to figure out why me, you know, did we walk around with a big whatever sign on our head saying abuse me? No, it was just the people, but that was part.
Thomas, let's delve into that for just a second. That's a beautiful question.
Yeah.
I think most of the people who come to our podcast and our survivors always say, like you said it so well, did I have a target?
Yeah.
Did I say, like, please choose me?
Right.
Please abuse me. Yeah. And it makes our egos fall right through the floor and underground, that we feel like we must have something broken or shattered. I know I got asked that same question yesterday.
Oh, really?
All boys school in New Jersey.
Yeah.
And the boy said, and he's a senior, Thomas, and he said, well, how did you ever get to the place where you could understand why God rejected you?
Oh, wow. Okay.
It's similar, like God, because I was trying like to be the good Christian.
Right.
I was married. So, and I went to like Sunday school, like I did all the right stuff. And so the guy said, you know, why do you think God chose to punish you, basically?
Mm.
You know, like why was it? So I think punishment and like the star on our head are so similar.
Yeah.
Like we either think like we did something wrong and we're being punished, or somebody said, take me over everybody else.
Yeah.
And I think both of us have come through with an answer to that. So I would love to hear your answer to that.
Yeah. So for me, I mean, it took a while, you know, to work through things, but I had to get to the point where I had to accept, because these were people supposedly that loved you. Right. And so I had to pretty much, I'm going to say not just rationalize, but come to the reality that all of us have, I say, good sides and bad sides. There's a jerk side to people and there's a good side to people. And unfortunately, during this time, I was experiencing the jerk side of people, right? Mm. But then to learn not to take it personally as there's something wrong with me. And that's often what happens is all these things get projected onto the survivor. And that's one of the issues that we have, even in society. Oftentimes, it's not the perpetrator, but it's oftentimes the victim who gets the first blame. You know, like we're talking about the denim. Well, what were you wearing?
Right. Oh, yeah. Let's tell our audience. So we need to inform them about our prior. Like, we were almost ready to record the whole thing without you all.
Yeah.
So sorry. We just got talking, audience. But it's like because we're so passionate. So I was telling Thomas T-Bone about Denim Day. And for those of our listeners who don't know, there's this once upon a time real life case in Italy. You know, imagine romance and they have the Venice and all the art. And so one judge once upon a time about 20 years ago, a rape case is in front of the judge, and the jeans worn by the woman who was raped, I believe by one, but maybe two men.
Oh, wow.
We can look it up.
Yeah.
She did not know these men or had barely met these men. And her jeans were held up. I don't know if the judge made her put them on, but they were deemed to be so tight that there is zero chance that she could have been unwilling at the time of her rape because the jeans were unable to come off her body without her personal assistance. So
see, that's not even logical, Katie. I mean, I could have gained weight between that time, between whatever the trial, right?
Yeah. But nonetheless, like consent based on how tight one's clothing is at the time is preposterous.
Yeah.
I would like to think about one thing, T-Bone, I hate to go there.
Yeah.
But if, you know, because men can be raped, obviously. So what if, you know, the chastity belt for men was like his underwear was the snuggest fitting.
Yeah, there was no way.
Boxer. The tightest lockbox of boxer.
Yes.
The entire region was so well protected.
Yes.
It was some sort of cinch belt.
Yes.
Well, it could not have come off.
Well, we do. And it's a societal norm, which says that men can't be victims of sexual abuse, that we are always the perpetrators, right? And so that's even there in that form, maybe not be physical form, but even just from an I'm going to say societal indoctrination, just the thought, the zeitgeist that takes place in our society that men can't be victims, that you can't be raped. And if you are, here we go, there's something wrong with you. You're less than. Oh, once again, notice that the blame is being put on the victim. Yeah.
What do you put? So here's another one, Thomas, that I get asked a lot. How can men possibly be raped? Because A, how could you, quote, get it up?
Mm-hmm.
But hello, we forget the other parts of the anatomy.
Right.
And so that's one. And maybe you have great lines that we can talk to our listeners that they can use to educate their communities. And the second one I get is most men say, if I didn't want to be raped, I would fight the blank, blank, blank. I would kill them before I would go through this trauma. So maybe we talk about like the physicality for a second and dispel that myth. And then also like that all men would either be required to, or they're less of a man if they don't resist.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting when I hear individuals that make that, well, you know, I would have fight or whatever. And I was like, okay, so let's just talk a little bit about, you know, what goes on in your brain. And so I even just explain it like this, right? So let's just say you walk out and something jumps from behind, whatever, a tree or something. What's the first thing that your body does, right? It freezes, right? That's it. I don't care who you think you are. It could be a second, nanosecond, whatever. your body freezes. And right. And so when we're talking about the trauma that's taking place when the sexual abuse, that's actually oftentimes what happens. So the body's trying to figure out what's going on. It's trying to freeze. It's trying to assess. And now when you think about all the neurons that are being fired on inside your brain, especially if this happens during childhood, your brain doesn't know what to do and what to think. I remember when I was talking for Sandusky, as I shared with you when that came up.
Oh, yeah. Tell the audience a little bit, because that's so cool. So tell us how you came to be in that space.
Yeah, so this was, I think it was 2010 or 11. This is when the Sandusky case, whatever, in Pennsylvania broke Penn State. And so they were having a conference because so many people were being triggered, but they didn't have anyone who could actually work with men because a lot of guys were being triggered. So they flew me out to the conference to actually, you know, work with survivors who were being triggered because of that whole case that was taking place there in Pennsylvania. And so as I was working, you know, with the guys, you know, this whole idea of like, okay, but wait a minute, you know, during my sexual abuse, arousal took place. I'm like, well, you know, when we're talking about the brain chemistry, stimulation is stimulation. And it was so cool because there was this one neuroscientist there, and man, she was spot on. And she explained how in your brain, the circuitry, she says the jump from pain to pleasure is just like nano, whatever. I don't even know what the length she gave right there. And she says what happens is, she's like, it's so close together that what happens is it crosses the barrier and it becomes the other one. So it can be pleasurable, right? At the same time, it can just jump right across that line and then it becomes the most horrific. Or it can be horrific and it jumps over the line and it becomes pleasurable. I was like, oh my gosh, that explains so many things that are going on.
So let me see if I can maybe give it to you in another way that might help us to kind of understand this a little bit better. So I want you to think about a person tickling you, okay? You know, so they're tickling you, your sides, your stomach, whatever, and you're laughing and you're giggling, you know, just like little kids when you do that to them. But then after a while, it switches. And so that same little thing that was pleasurable actually becomes annoying. And so it's jumped kind of from whatever that pleasurable tick giggling side over to this annoying, will you please stop it? And I was like, wow, that's interesting how it can cross from pleasurable to painful or from painful to pleasurable. And that just helped me to understand a little bit more, you know, as she was explaining it and talking about, you know, you could be aroused, whatever, sexually. But then at the same time, if it jumps that barrier, it actually becomes painful, or it can actually be painful, start off painful. And then, I don't know, your brain just gets to the point where then it moves over, it jumps that little barrier, whatever it is. And then from the painful, it actually becomes pleasurable. I was like, wow, it's just so interesting the way that the brain is working. Okay, I digress. So let me get back here. But okay, so back to our little rabbit. Let's say our little rabbit, right? He sees the fox. So what happens is his body just freezes. It freezes for a moment because it's trying to figure out, okay, what are they gonna do? Are we going to run? Or are we not going to run? Should we send, you know, blood to the muscles so we can run? Or should we play possum and just play dead? All these things are going on inside of the brain during this traumatic experience. So now tell me, are you going to fight? We don't know. It depends on your brain. Your brain might think that, you know what, I'll better survive this if I just what we call fawn. Okay, as I share this and talk about this, I want to be, I'm saying not careful here, but we're going to start changing, I'm going to say the language a little bit from the way that we've kind of been taught, because we always talk about fight and flight. Now, I'm going to use that because that's what everyone knows, but I want to kind of get into the mindset of maybe really understanding. So those terms, when we talk about fight or flight, so really those terms were coined in the early 20th century by Walter Cannon, and he was a Harvard physiologist. So since Cannon was a physiologist and not a behavioral scientist, he was studying like the body's internal responses to stressful situations, not to the actual outward behavior. And so when he would write, you know, specifically about, you know, potentially engaging in behaviors that might enable coping and survival. But he focused on what was known as the sympathetic nervous system activation. So, you know, adrenaline stuff is released and you have other physiological changes. Now, this term even goes back way before Walter Cannon to the 1800s. Okay. Now, the reason I just want to share this, because when we use this term, often fight or flight, it's often harmful. And the reason it's harmful, in reality, it's unusual to fight or flee while you're actually being sexually assaulted. Okay. But yet, thanks to popularity of fight and flight, because we've used it so many times, and the confusion about what it actually means, so many people actually wrongly believe that fighting and fleeing are the two most natural and common responses. And so sometimes what happens is this, when we use this language, it's harmful to the survivor or the victim, because many people, including the survivors themselves, wrongly believed that it's unusual if they didn't fight or if they didn't flee, if they didn't run, right? And so that causes the survivor to be misunderstood and even judged and blamed. Once again, there we are. We're blaming the victim, and including actually blaming ourselves. Because I failed. I failed because I didn't fight back. I failed, you know, because I didn't flee. I didn't run. I didn't behave supposedly in the normal ways when you're being assaulted. And so the thing about it is, when we're thinking about this, when we look at it from the science perspective, fight and flight are not the first thing that actually typically happens when we're talking about behavior. Remember, that's what we're talking about, behavior. Right. And even, you know, I'm still going to use words, you know, freeze, fawn, faint. And sometimes those don't really help, but I'm using them because these are the words that everyone kind of understand. But I want us to start focusing on the different language, and there are better terms for this. And those terms are maybe like survival mode, reflexes, and habits. I'll talk about that at a later day, but just realize that when we're talking about fight and flight, that's not the first thing that usually happens in the brain. It's survival mode. Okay, so I hope that helps. Okay, now you're gonna like, you just confused me, Thomas, because you're gonna still use fight and flight. I will, but if you go to my podcast on my safe place for malesurvivors.com, I have a whole little spiel on it. But since we're here, I just kind of wanted to give that little caveat. And so Fawn is like, okay, I'm just going to let the person do whatever it is because that way at least I'll survive, right? Some people, though, for them, it's flight. So they're trying to get away. They're going to try and run away. For some people, it is fight. They're going to kick. They're going to scream. And what we notice is usually the people that have done that, maybe they've had some type of training or they've thought about at least that scenario before. But even when they think about that scenario, the first thing that comes is the freeze. No matter what, the freeze always comes. And so when you're talking to people and you saw, and they say, well, you know, why didn't you whatever? You need to just realize there are different stages that your brain is going through during the trauma, right? And so that's why that's a difficult question to answer. Oftentimes, though, when I'm working with male survivors and we're going through their story, and sometimes I'll use hypnotherapy to help them. And what they'll do is they will kind of come to their own acknowledgement of where they felt they were. Was it fight? Was it flight? Did they freeze or did they fawn? And then it's at that point that I try to introduce and give them something else to think about and say, well, you know, really what happened was your brain was in survival mode. And when you're in survival mode, guess what happens? Reflexes and habits are king. And it's like when they kind of get some idea of that, it just gives them a better understanding and even a better acceptance of like, wow, that was a traumatized state. And why would I expect myself or anyone else, right, to either fight or whatever, right? And
hey,
so
Timon, you're doing amazing.
Yeah.
I just want to ask a quick question.
Sure.
To clarify something that you just made me think of. I think everything you just said was amazing, okay, so helpful. Listeners, I would encourage you to push pause.
Yes.
And listen again.
Yes.
Because Thomas just told you a zillion good things. So if you need to hear my voice for a second, I have a good question. This is interesting. I've been trying to think about this myself. Where we embed the fear, like the freeze mode, you know, the response to trauma. Mm-hmm. Some of us freeze.
Yeah.
Some of us flee. Mm-hmm. And some of us fight, right? Mm-hmm.
And some of us fawn. Yeah.
And fawn.
Yeah.
Let's go back to fawn just for a second so yes. Our listeners know what that means.
Okay. So first of all, Don, just remember, I need you to picture yourself in survival mode, right? And so that means you're going to do whatever it takes in order to survive this threatening, deadly event that's taking place. So this is what I say for fawn. Okay, and then once again, if this is triggering, you know, come back to it later. And I even remember Dr. Lisak. He's one of my friends, and he's a PhD, and he does this. He's the king.
My gosh,
he's the king.
I'm glad you're friends with him.
Yes,
I bet he's published 58 articles by now.
Yeah. Yeah.
If not more.
Yeah.
If not more.
No, he's awesome. We hang out for holidays and stuff. I always go to New Mexico and hang out with him. Okay.
All right.
So perfect. So think of it from this perspective, the fawn. Okay. So let's just say the person is being sexually abused. And so the brain's trying to figure out what to do. And so the brain's like, okay, this person is bigger than me. This person has a knife. This person has a gun. It's running through all these things in nanoseconds. Okay.
Right.
So if I fight, that means I might get cut, I might get stabbed, whatever, I might get shot. However, if I just lay here and take it and allow my body, my mind to dissociate, then I might survive. So I'm fawning.
Got it.
Okay.
So fawning is a little bit dissociation.
Yes.
Or a lot, 100%.
Well, it's a lot because people, when they talk about even that instance, they'll say that, you know, the person was raping me, but I could hear the water in the kitchen dropping from the faucet, right? So it's like you're moving yourself from your body so you don't have to feel that violation that's taking on. and the brain is just focusing and concentrating on something else, right? And so that's why you hear people say that, oh, they kind of went somewhere else while they were being abused, which sometimes is an issue for people who aren't trained in handling like that, because then people like, you know, officers and things, when they're taking reports, they'll be like, well, my goodness, if you can't tell us exactly what happened, you know, were you actually raped? Were you actually sexually abused? Well, yes, I was. But if you understand how the brain works, my brain is dissociating so it doesn't have to deal with what's going on here to my body, right?
And then we side note to Thomas and myself and to our listeners, if this piques your interest, obviously we need much more training for all of law enforcement, all the investigators, all of the Title IX, all of the judicial boards at colleges, like all the military bases. And I think we have a lot of work ahead of us.
Yeah. And judges.
And judges, of course.
Yeah.
Because for some reason, I think all of these responses, for the most, it's ironic. T-Bone, I put this to you.
Yeah.
I think what's interesting and hard when we think of ourselves as agents of change, think about the people who are making the judges and doing the analysis are thinking so concretely with their analytical brain,
right,
that all of the things you just reviewed and said are completely understandable by brain chemistry and neurobiology do not resonate with the people making those decisions about victims and their futures. So we need to connect those dots. So make it a mission, listeners. T-Bone and I are going to work hard on some palatable folks who have lots of credentials and work really hard to do this work. For our listeners, I take a moment to tell both T-Bone about this and our listeners about something cool. Along those same lines we've just been talking about, Take Back the Night has created an entire national network of fabulous trauma-informed attorneys to help support survivors. We have a hotline. It's free. You can talk to an amazing person or fill out a form and get some unbiased, really victim-centered advice about what you could do. So if you didn't know that existed, that's really important because, you know, obviously T-Bone just mentioned Sandusky was a huge legal mess for the institution, for the for the victims, for everything else. So I hate to say this to our listeners, but one thing that's really cool is if you keep listening to our podcast, you're going to learn a lot of empowerment. But one interesting thing is I think T-Bone and myself are two of those kind of folks who are survivors of multiple trauma who have also come out stronger. And some of it was our own due diligence on like figuring out what worked for ourselves.
Yeah. So, and that's when, you know, when you started out and I started out with the word frustration. So what kind of put me on this, what put me on this path, right? Okay. Yeah. So all the things that I just explained now. So now, now I'm in my 50s. All right. So, you know, when I was coming up and when this happened, there wasn't like much information and stuff for men and for guys. And so for me, you know, you, like you said, you have to find what works for you. But I noticed for me that sitting there in therapy and just talking about the story over and over and over and over didn't really help me that well. Okay. I'm sorry. Not to,
I'm doing this. Right? Same.
Yeah. Not to knock it, but different people. It's like, okay, so we've talked about that. Okay. But so, right. Yeah. Right.
I was like, do I need a to-do list?
Yeah. I'm like, what are the solutions? I'm dealing with these.
Give me some action items.
Yes. Yes. I hear you. I'm dealing with these issues, which, you know, now we call them CPTSD, which is complex post-traumatic stress disorder. Perfect. So, so then my first, and this was interesting. Okay. So my martial arts instructor just realized there was something that was off with me. Right. And this is, let's see, I would have been in my 20s or something like that. And so he suggested, he's like, hey, he's like, since you're going to go to China. Okay. So let me share with you.
Sorry. Well, push pause. Okay. China. Hello.
Yes.
Let's go there.
So in college, I was a language major and Chinese was one of my languages.
Oh my gosh.
Yes.
So you are a guru in all fields.
Yes. So for those that are listening, well, 会说一点. All right. So I'm like, okay.
Oh my God.
So
we can't go much up from there.
Yeah.
We might overwhelm everybody. You are so incredible. And for our listeners, at the end of this podcast, I promise what's coming is some excellent gardening tips. Yeah. You will not believe it, but our gentleman is also an extraordinary chef.
Yes. So
wait for what's coming. But okay, China, here we come.
So China, so here we come. So there we are, because I was also studying martial arts at that time. So Shaolin martial arts, Shaolin Kung Fu. So I get to the Shaolin temple and talking with the monks and just sharing some stuff. And once again, you know, as they were talking with me, you know, just from their understanding of kind of how the world works, they could see that there was something there. So they'd bring me into this room, and if you've ever seen those movies on TV, you know, where they ring the giant gong, whatever thing. Right, yeah. Boom. So anyway, so they take me into this room. It's a medium-sized room, so they just have me to lay down in the middle. And then the monks, what they do is they come around, and they sit down, and they sit there with their singing bowls. Right? The singing bowls, you know, the wing, right? And they start playing whatever this certain, whatever tune or megahertz. And so the sound waves are hitting my body. And it's starting to bring up memories and stuff of the sexual abuse, things that I didn't even remember, right? We're starting to come. I'm like, oh my goodness. I mean, it freaked me out, but I'm like, this is cool. Right. This is really, really cool. And now this is way before, you know, it got to the West and they started marketing sound therapy and those different type of things. They had been doing this, of course, for thousands of years. Right. And so I stayed there for a little bit and I asked them to teach me. Okay. Teach me how to do this. Right. So when I came back, you know, to the States, that had opened me up once again to just starting to find more of my own path, right? So then I'm like, okay, so there's something to this whole, and this was before the book, The Body Keeps Score, came out, right?
Oh, that's an important book.
Yes.
Yeah, let's mention that.
Yes.
It's an excellent book.
It's a really, yeah, it's an excellent book, right? But I was learning this firsthand, even way before this was written, understanding that trauma was actually trapped in the body. So it's not just the mind, but it's also the body. I'm like, okay, so if this is true, right, if it's trapped in the body, there's other things. All right. So then I went to Bastyr University. And so that's the number one naturopath college because I was living in Seattle. It was right in my own backyard. I'm like, okay. So I went and I did, I worked in my degree in herbal science, herbal medicine, right? So of course, I like plants, right? So,
I know.
Right? What plants can you eat to do this and do that? And then someone says, hey, you know, while you're doing this, you should hook the massage piece onto this. I was like, oh, wow. Okay, but let me tell you what brought me to the massage piece first.
Oh, yes. We need to hear that.
Yes. So I'm sitting at a conference in Microsoft. And this person is sitting next to me. Okay, this lady, she's sitting next to me and just accidentally her hand brushed and fell down and brushed my leg. And it just sent me into a emotional flashback of one of my sexual abusers who was a female. And she, what was unique about this one, because I didn't remember until it, she actually touched me and it triggered or it resonated with me. So while she was sexually abusing me, so for you guys that think this is pleasurable, she cut me with glass and she burned me with cigarettes. Okay? Mm. So, you know, if you think that was pleasurable, no, it wasn't pleasurable, you know, at all. So then it sent me into what's known as hapnophobia. So hapnophobia is the fear of being touched, right?
It's H-A-T?
H-A-E. Hafnophobia. H-A-E. Yeah. H-A-E. I think it's H-A-E-N-P-N-P-O-P-I-B-A. You can look it up. Hafnophobia. Right. Mm-hmm. So anyway, it's the fear of being touched, right? So, and it was all being triggered, of course, by the abuse, but specifically that one incident from my abuse history. And so I was walking around for I don't know how long, and I couldn't be touched by people. Now, if you can't tell by now, I'm a person who kind of do things gung-ho. I'm like, how are we going to get over this one, right? So someone told me while I was doing my degree in herbal science, they're like, oh, you know what? We have the number one massage school also in the state, so you should go do a massage. I'm like, what? People touch me? What's wrong with you, right? But I did. I went and I did the program, and it was the intense program. It was a year and a half, right? And I worked through the touch issue, or fear of being touched, the phobia of being touched, through becoming a massage therapist. And my specialty was I work with men who have been traumatized by sexual abuse.
Oh, my gosh. That's brilliant.
Yeah.
It's brilliant.
Yeah. Okay.
That's so powerful.
So all the pieces of my thing are coming together, but it's on this journey, right? And it's fitting all these pieces that I did not get sitting there just talking about what had happened to me, you know, week after week after week, because it was in my body. So my body needed to experience things. It needed to release the trauma, right? And then my mind needed to release the trauma, my emotions, right? So there were just so many different pieces. And so I was just searching. So I was just taking everything possible, right? You know, coaching. So I became a certified, you know, coach along with that, and trainer, and all the things I was picking up along the way. I was noticing how they were actually helping me to thrive.
Can I ask another question?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. I want all of our listeners again. Like, I keep begging you all, like, take that all in. Rewind. Yes. Listen, because sometimes I would just give cues to our listeners. What's really interesting to me is we live in a world of cursory glances, scrolls. We live in a world of, like, let's, like, get it all in really fast.
Yeah.
This podcast is deliberate. It's intentional. The people, you know, I invite and welcome and embrace and honor who join me on the podcast will serve all of humanity so well.
Yeah.
And this is designed to help us all sit and think and be that deliberate with our healing and our support and also self-care. So where I was headed with what you just said, thanks. Sorry. No. That was really important. I thought one thing that would be really interesting that I haven't really explored with any of our guests that you've kind of alluded to, and in a brilliant way, is, I don't want to simplify it, like talk therapy. Like, I don't want to just talk it through. But you've done a lot of, and that might serve some people, as you said.
Mm-hmm.
Like, talk it through might help a lot of people. I know, like you, T-Bone, that didn't serve me at all.
Yeah.
Like, I'm a very, like, concrete thinker. And I'm also very in the body. How do my, like, that book, what does my body do when presented with stress?
Yeah.
So let's turn our attention to that, because I literally just said to someone the other day, if you give me some tips where I can practice for a week, like almost like lifting weights, lifting my emotional weights, my mental weights, by like, and I gave the example, and T-Bone, this might resonate with you, but it was like, I've, like you, have had multiple incidents of trauma.
Yeah.
Most people know me for one thing that happened because I was on the time cover.
Mm-hmm.
But backstory, oh my gosh, there's more to that story.
Yeah.
But For the time cover, here's what I did to unpack one thing.
Yeah.
The guy's cologne, like, triggered me out the wazoo. Like, remember when you just had the woman's hand on your leg?
Yeah.
I was like, okay. So I did 5 senses, smell, touch, like all of them.
Yes.
The guy's cologne. Yes. So you know what I did? I doused everything I could find in the same scent for a week or more. I bought cologne. I sprayed it everywhere. It was like, if I was peeing, it was there. If I was eating, it was there. If I was like trying to play the piano, it was there. Like, the scent was there.
Yes.
And then all of a sudden, the scent of that trigger was done.
Yes.
And but that worked only because that was one isolated incident. And like you, you led so well. We're dealing with multiple incidents, multiple types, multiple perpetrators. And so it becomes more complex.
Yes.
But I just wanted to say, like, talk therapy can't probably help us as much as experiential. And you just, to recap for our listeners, we just had Thomas went to China and learned a skill set.
Yes.
You know, so like, I think sometimes we have to do the work instead of hear or talk the work.
Yeah.
So I turn it back to you.
I think we're starting to move more towards that and realizing that the approach needs to be an integrative approach. Mm-hmm. Right. And that's one of the reasons I do the workshops the way that I do because.
Oh, let's talk about those.
Yeah.
Yeah. Tell us about the workshops.
So the reason I do the workshops I do is because they...
Oh, how do they... Well, preface, like, what are they and how do we find them?
Okay,
and so... Are they only for men? Are they for people who don't identify as men?
Yes.
So, or heterosexual? Like, let's say, like, all of it.
Yes. So the workshops I do is called... It's called safeplaceformalesurvivors.com. And so we do the workshops. And yes, the workshops are for men. So you're welcome. So it's a 3-day... And then during the 3 days, now, the thing is, it takes place, I'm going to say, really, it's not just 3 days, because a month before you get there, so what I do is I interview you first, make sure that this is a right fit for you, depending on where you are in your journey. So let's just say if you're suffering acute post-traumatic stress disorder, then we need to find you some help, right? Because then this won't be the place for you. But if you're not in that spot, maybe you've worked through some stuff. Most people that come, they come because they're dealing with CPTSD issues, right?
Can you explain that acronym?
Yeah. So here's the thing. And someone even asked me the other day, they're like, what is this? I'm like, okay. So I said, do you know what post-traumatic stress disorder is? And they're like, yeah, right. And they start sharing some of the things. You're having these emotional, you know, flashbacks, and you have these intrusive thoughts, whatever, that are coming into place. And sometimes you've got, you know, suicide ideations, and they're all within this amount of time after whatever the trauma has happened. I'm like, great. So you understand what post-traumatic stress disorder is, right? They're like, yeah. Okay, so now think of yourself 10 years later, and you're still experiencing some of those. They're like, oh, yeah. But why are you experiencing them? Shouldn't you be over it by now? Because that's what everyone says, right? Why aren't you? Well, I don't know. You know, I'm still kind of dealing with whatever. And these things are, I'm like, yes, because it's complex. That's why it's called complex post-traumatic stress disorder. Because according to the DSMV, which is the Diagnostic Statistical Manual, which they use to give you the criteria for whatever you have, depression or whatever, it's not in there, even though we all talk about it, right? Why? Because it's complex. And so it's hard to sit there and check off each one because each individual is different, right? Now, we have, there are common things that we might be experiencing, but it's hard for us to kind of like pinpoint them, right? So that's why one of the reasons it's called complex post-traumatic stress disorder, because whatever the complexity that's going on, you're still experiencing those things, let's say years, whatever, later. That's the easiest way that I can explain it without going into all the...
So you offer them, are they in person or online?
So the workshops are in person. right? And so one of the reasons is this is my motto, right? Healing, I'm going to say complete healing does not take place in isolation. It takes place in community and relationship. So when you think about people who heal the most, it's not usually that they're there by themselves. There's some type of interaction that's taking place, whether they've read a book, well, that's still interacting with someone else who wrote that they're sharing whatever their idea. Healing always takes place in relationship. And so what is the one thing that for us as survivors that has really been thwarted and damaged? It's relationship. So what we do is we're bringing the guys together so once again we can heal, but we're healing in community and relationship. And so what that means is you realize that you are not alone. You realize that you are not the only one. And then from that meeting, now you've already got a support network, right?
Brilliant.
So that's one of the reasons. So anyway, so the workshop, it's 3 days.
We come
and I usually ask people, like, what are some things that you want to work on? Now I already have an agenda of things we're gonna cover. So we'll do stuff like, you know, teaching you. Okay, here's my other thing. I said this was one of the reasons therapy didn't work for me. I want to give you tools, strategies, and insights that you can use. This is the cool thing about coaching, right? The whole thing behind coaching is I'm trying to give you what you need so that you don't need me anymore, right? That's the whole point behind coaching. So I'm trying to give you the tools that are going to help you to be resilient because no, I can't be with you 24/7, right? But when that emotional, let's just say, flashback comes to you and you're like, oh, that's right, T-Bone taught me Abra from Harry Potter, mm-hmm. Abracadabra, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm going to do it. I'm going to sit here. I'm going to acknowledge it. I'm going to breathe. I'm going to do my 4 seconds in and out because that's going to work with my parasympathetic nervous system. I'm going to release it. And now I'm going to align it with the truth. What is the truth? The truth is right now I'm not being attacked. I'm sitting here with all these people and there is no immediate danger. That's the Abra technique, right?
I love it.
So as what we're doing at the workshop is we're learning these different things and different strategies so that when you leave here, you can go out and you can continue to flourish and thrive. And the nice thing about the workshop is that we talk about subjects that are really heavy, things that people just don't talk about in therapy. Like, so we're talking about erectile dysfunction and all these different type of things that they're like, there's no way, there's no other place I could talk about this and feel comfortable talking about these things. Why, you know, why do I have ED after my, you know, my sexual abuse, you know, and people asking questions, you know, what's my sexual orientation, identity? We're working through all these things because this is a place, that's why we call it a safe place, that we created where you can work on those things.
I love it, T-Bone. Yeah. Oh my gosh. Our interview has, like, we've gone for like 45 minutes, but we probably could.
Oh, I know.
For days.
Yeah.
But here's where I go for our listeners.
Yeah.
Please. T-Bone has given a gift of his personal truth, his journey, and what has worked for him and what has not worked. And I personally connect a lot with, you know, many of the things he said.
Yeah.
Traditional therapy or talking to your best friend or your minister or your rabbi or your faith God or your healing stones.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Or your star reader,
your plants.
You know, there's so many ways that we all try to find help.
Yeah.
My first message to all of us is T-Bone gave you a ton of options. Whether you identify as any gender, I encourage you to listen to what was offered today. And secondly, I hope very much if you resonate with what T-Bone said and you happen to live in California, since this is in person, we will post his information and how to get into contact and sign up for his
travel. No, we have international. Yeah. I have people coming from New Zealand, Australia, whatever, for the workshops. Yes, international. And that's done some in other places.
Let's bring more people in.
Yeah.
So I would just say, if you like hearing this and you all give us feedback and you're like, we want more T-Bone, we could do another session for those of you who are interested just on what that looks like, you know, for a quick 20-30 minutes, just to explore what that might look like. Because I think the process sounds so helpful and so different from, you know, what maybe you've been pushed at in the past. But
One of the things for me is this, and you also asked me what was it, and I said the frustration was one of the reasons I do this, and this is I think this is a Buddhist kind of idea, and it's called Kensho and Satori, right? Kensho is when you learn things kind of the old painful method, right? So, okay, so you lose all your money, and so then you learn that, oh, you know what? I shouldn't put my eggs all in one basket. Let's just say, you know, investing or whatever, right? So you learn from a slow, painful way that, oh, I need to divest my money when I'm investing, right? That's what would be known as a Kensho moment. Or let's just say the love of your life, you don't really communicate with them. And so this love that you had of your life says, you know what? I'm just tired of doing this. And so then you learn that, oh, well, you know what? I should be more vulnerable. Okay, but you had to go through pain in order to learn that, whatever that lesson. Mm-hmm. That's what's known as Kensho. Okay, we call it the slow Kensho. Burn. Kensho.
Is it Japanese?
Yeah, I think it is. Okay. I think it is, Jen.
I think it's Japanese. That's the word I know.
Okay, Kensho. And then Satori are the Eureka aha moments. And usually we get those when someone shares something with us. So like I shared with you talking about the neuroscience and the flight, the freeze and fawn. And you're like, oh, that's what it was. That's Satori. Mm. Those are those. Now, here's the thing. The reason I do what I do is because I don't want you to have to experience more Kenshos. So I'm trying to give you insights and strategies so you can have more Satori moments so that you have more time to actually enjoy your life and thrive. That's why I do what I do.
Let's land on that. That was the most beautiful, hopeful.
Yeah.
All of us deserve to thrive and love.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
We do put that a different way. Like, we should all feel confident that when we get up in the morning, we have something to offer ourselves and the world.
Yeah.
And we should all be confident enough to be vulnerable, to share our emotional selves in a loving state with someone else who can reciprocate in a respectful way.
All right, everyone, there you have it. So hopefully you got something out of that. Man, there's just so many things that just runs through my brain whenever when I'm interviewed or when I'm talking with someone or when I'm coaching. And so that's one of the, you know, the reasons that I do the newsletters, because I'll be coaching or I'll be doing the podcast. I'm like, oh, you know what I forgot to mention or talk about. And so then what I do is I put it in the newsletter. So if you want that newsletter, so it's free, just go up to safeplaceformalesurvivors.com and hit that button that says free newsletter, right? And sign up, subscribe, and it will come and it will be in your mailbox. And so, it's where you kind of get the extras that sometimes either I forget to talk about or I haven't, or like I said, you know, I've just finished a coaching session with someone and like, oh, you know what? That'll be a good thing to actually add to the newsletter. All right, guys, you know the deal. So just remember, this is the place, right? This is a safe place for male survivors. And just remember, I know this word is hard for us to, I'm going to say grasp sometimes just because of the way it's been used, but you need to know that someone cares about you here and that someone loves you, right? And that's me here at safeplaceformalesurvivors.com. All right, guys, until our next podcast.